I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the world of investment by focusing on its people and their stories. I'm joined today by Maggie Raplian, who's a partner at Moneta with a focus on couples, business owners, and next generation investors. We're sitting down in person in her office in St. Louis, which is a particular treat. Welcome, Maggie. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Ethan.
Well, let's start a little bit with your background and what brought you to this point. Can you walk us through how you ended up becoming a financial advisor?
Sure. So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. I had an early life event. I lost my father to cancer at a young age. It was unexpected. So I was raised by a single mother. Immediately going through that life event and watching her vulnerability, I took interest in being financially literate and having business acumen. So I went to business school, took interest in finance, was always fascinated with the stock market and like the idea of helping others to become financially literate and kind of fulfilling that and working through that. So that's how I got into the industry. I started in a large wirehouse here in St. Louis, and then transitioned to a startup RIA and landed at Moneta.
What is it about the industry that makes you see it as being for you? What do you enjoy about the impact you have on your clients' lives?
Yeah, so my mom actually was an ER nurse. I've always had an interest in helping people. And so this business allowed me to align my interest in finance and the market and planning with also the empathetic side of just helping people.
And can you tell us a little bit about the Moneta structure that attracts you to working here? Because I think we talked a little bit about your entrepreneurial instinct, running your own business, and now you're a partner recently. Congratulations on that. So what is it about the structure here that fits the way you like to be an advisor?
Sure. I think I'm unique in that I have seen various business models in this industry. So I started out in a large wirehouse, which, you know, I got great training there. There was great leadership there. I partnered with a large team from the beginning of my career. I started out in the business around age 26. And so the gentleman that I was working with had been in the industry about 25 years. He was looking to retire at the end of his career and realized he did not have a lot of flexibility and option for that. And so seeing him go through that at the end of his career, I think gave me a little bit more insight than what most advisors get. So we decided to actually launch an RIA, or he did. So I helped start an RIA from scratch. It was custody just with Fidelity. I found there was not a lot of resources and infrastructure that I wanted for myself or for my clients. So I started looking out in the market for opportunities for firms, one that would align with my values, that two would feed my entrepreneurial instinct to own my own business. And I found Moneta in that. There's not a lot of firms that truly offer that. So I'm really excited to be here and to be a partner today.
How would you say aligning with your values? Where do your values, I suppose, begin when it comes to this financial advice? What's your target? Who do you like to work with? And what do you bring to do that from a value standpoint?
I think it's really, you know, simple. And one of my mantras is to always do the right thing for people. I don't want to ever feel like I'm subject to conflicts of interest, because the firm that I'm associated with has interest outside of simply just doing the right thing for clients and always taking great care of them. And unfortunately, when you work for larger firms, they can be focused on clients, but at the same time, also focused on profits, right? And so that's when you start to feel some of those conflicts. And so that was important to me in terms of values. And the clients that I serve, I have an entrepreneurial spirit. I love working with business owners. I worked with 401k plans really early on in my career, which kind of introduced me to business owners. And I've really enjoyed that. I work with a lot of couples, helping people to communicate on their finances. I think that can be a big risk to any kind of relationship if you're not aligned financially. And next gen, being newer in my career, naturally working with people my age or slightly younger, having older clients that are really concerned about working with their children, has been a niche for me that I've really enjoyed, because I think you can make a huge impact on people's lives if you can get to them early. And that's just kind of where I'm at today.
It's interesting because I think that touches on so many of the factors in terms of the evolution of this industry right now. It's evolution around more of a wraparound holistic services. You mentioned that it's almost like a financial therapy in a sense. Some of the things you're speaking about, maybe you don't call it that officially, but you're working with improving literacy, helping to, when it comes to couples, perhaps the communication around money. How do you think our industry is evolving from being more commoditized, perhaps, into being that more tailored, more personal touch?
I think clients are looking for a deeper relationship. I think they are wising up to wanting to work with a true fiduciary that they know is sitting on the same side of the table as them. I think having the human aspect and the life experience that I have helps me empathize with clients and maybe have some of the harder conversations that some advisors are not fit to have. It's easy to talk about market themes. It's not easy to talk about relationship issues or fears or concerns or paralysis, right? So sometimes you're dealing with clients that are simply paralyzed because they don't know what to do, right? What's the right next step, and how can I find someone that I'm comfortable enough to share my true feelings about finance? I think people are intimidated by it. And I think me having that behavioral aspect, or being able to identify that and see that and have the conversation, helps me have a deeper relationship with clients. And I think people are seeking that out.
So that, what I suppose, would throw into question the importance of the human relationship and the trust aspect. How do you go about building that trust, cultivating that trust with clients?
Taking our time initially. So really taking the time to really understand where people are coming from, what their experience was with money growing up, how they feel about it today, what their real goals are, helping people really think through what those goals look like, and being able to provide a plan that they can understand and be able to speak in a language that they can understand, and helping them align their goals with their finances. I think that's how you build trust early on, and just focusing on trust and building trust and being reliable and being really consistent in our service model.
And because you said you think clients are looking for a deeper relationship, that would suggest that the robo-advisor model, which we've all been looking at with the advent of AI and just the increasing creep of these kind of tools, that it is less of a threat, perhaps, because it may give functionality, but it won't give depth.
Doing this for 10 years, I've never been concerned about robo-advisors. I have watched people be at the whims of their own behavior, and recognizing how complex and unique each person is. There's not a general opinion across the board for anyone, because everyone's situation is unique. And then dealing with the amount of technology and the amount of information people are inundated with, there's a lot of information out there, and being able to filter that to have it apply to your personal unique situation, I think, is really difficult. So I've never really felt threatened
by that. That's good news for us humans left in the business. So what's on your mind today? Here we are, early 2024. We're looking at a raging economy that's defying all expectations. Inflation may be in the rearview mirror, but a lot of complexity out there still, and a lot of uncertainty. What's on your mind? And then later we'll talk about what's on your client's mind, but what's on your mind right now?
Looking at the industry, I'm a little concerned with the amount of risk that clients need to take on to achieve certain levels of return. Bond yields have gotten better, but that was a really tough place to be the last 10 years. So the amount of risk that people have to take on, the amount of planning that's really involved for clients, I think, and I've said this in other articles and opportunity, I don't think that clients are as focused on savings rates and really managing their full financial plan over just, you know, what the media offers in terms of Robinhood and stock picking, and not really focusing on the planning aspect. There's a lot of risk, I think, in lack of tax planning and estate planning, and, you know, making sure that clients are holistically protected across the board, because missing in some of those areas can really be devastating if it's not caught early enough.
And is there any one thing that you find maybe is often missing, whether that be comprehensive insurance, maybe will? I know there's a huge percentage of people don't have their estate planning in order or haven't even thought about wills. Anything that you, where you feel you can really make an impact early because it's not being done?
Yeah, especially with business owners, I think they're just so busy. I think people in general are just so busy that they don't have time to really focus in on basic things like tax planning and estate planning and making sure that their families are protected in the event that they're a key man and something happens to them suddenly. With couples, I think it's lack of communication. I think there's a lot in the media and social media kind of mocking spending and budgeting, and it's really, really an important factor in being successful financially. I've seen people that don't plan properly. You get one chance to save, and what that looks like in your 60s when you haven't saved adequately is just unfortunate. And there's no way to do that over.
And hence the need, of course, to tackle the next generation early, at least to instill those rules of thumb or norms or behavioral techniques.
And again, with that, next gen, not focusing on savings rates early enough, not getting powers of attorney established, not getting your children familiar with money and how to spend money and what money is. I think today's kids are a little bit more privileged than the prior generations. So them really understanding the concept of money early makes a huge difference in their relationship and values with money and teaching them good values around money.
And you spoke a little bit about the complexity growing in this and risk-taking growing, perhaps because we've come out of a low-risk environment. From my perspective, I see the investment products range growing dramatically, whether that's around alternatives, private equity, coming out in these smaller bite sizes, different platforms, et cetera. Any thoughts in your mind in terms of where this is heading? Do you think this complexity is a positive thing?
I think it creates a lot of inertia. I think it's hard to factor in what really makes sense for your average investor. I think there's just a lot of inertia. And again, I think people get too focused on the micro details of a portfolio and can end up overweighted to certain asset classes unknowingly. Individual stocks versus indexes versus private opportunities and really being able to decipher all of that. For me, I think it's a great thing. I think Mineta and what you've actually built at our firm in terms of the private opportunities have been great with the due diligence and the oversight of your team, plus us as the intermediary between you and the client. I think there's a great opportunity there, but as an individual investor out in the universe of investing, I think it's hard to understand where the opportunities are.
And we were speaking earlier about some of the things that maybe keep clients up at night. And some things that surprised me a little, you mentioned transparency around fees being important to clients, teaching their children about money, keeping them up at night. Anything that you see from clients or really at the forefront today as they look at the environment they're in?
Yeah, I think people, again, younger investors, next gen investors have seen deceit and some of that went on in 2008 and the old models that financial advisors operated on that were commission based. I think they're especially looking for someone that they can trust. I think business owners know how busy they are and really want to make sure that they are working with someone that's being fair to them. Overall, I think clients just want to work with someone that they can trust, that's transparent about fees, that it's very easy to understand how we're compensated. I think that people are definitely starting to look for that.
And I know you work with many generations. One of the things we see, because we look at investors, is actually it's been so long since there was a real downturn. You actually have people who run their entire careers without seeing a recession or truly difficult circumstances. I presume you're seeing a similar thing, that there'll be some generations who've never seen what can happen when employment starts to struggle.
Yes, I think risk is all about expectations. So with the great run that we've had in the markets over the last 12, 14 years, explaining to clients that this cannot perpetuate forever and setting those expectations and making sure that clients are reallocating their portfolios. For example, clients that we get today that are coming in that maybe have been self-directed for the last 10 years, we're finding that 90% of their portfolio is allocated to the big seven, right? Or to US large growth. So helping set expectations for clients that this can change by showing them different decades, you know, your team provides a lot of history for us to be able to show them that trends can easily change, and helping them protect their portfolio from themselves, right? And get out of those biases that tend to be embedded, especially with self-directed investors. I feel like our clients have the right expectations. I know that they are not overweighted to any one asset class, but for the prospects that I'm seeing that have been managing their portfolios for a long time, that's not the case.
And let's move to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is diversity in this industry. And we hear a lot about the rising power of the female consumer, female clients, more autonomy over their finances. And it still seems that there is not a balanced advisor landscape in terms of by gender. How do you see the diversity of the industry as improving maybe over recent years since you've been in it?
I think clients in the industry have also wisened up to the fact that there is a definite need for that. I think firms are providing pathways for females to enter the industry. I think they're changing their marketing geared towards top earners, female earners. I think I've seen statistics that in 50% of households, women are top earners. I think historically our industry has done a not so great job marketing to women and drawing women into the industry, but I definitely think that's starting to improve.
So you're optimistic at this juncture?
I'm very optimistic. Yeah.
Let's go back to some personal reflections now. So can you tell us a little bit about other interests you have? I know that you're involved with Girls on the Run, for example. What are some of the causes that are close to your heart?
So fitness has always been a huge part of my life. I'm involved with Girls on the Run. Yes, it's an experiment-based program in that they teach young girls how to run and how to persevere through that and give them the experience at the end of the program to run a 5K together, which is phenomenal. The St. Louis chapter just had, I believe, 1,600 girls enroll for the spring race, which was huge coming out of COVID, because COVID was really, really tough for the program. But I'm very close to Girls on the Run because of the curriculum. So they teach girls coping skills, how to build confidence, how to be kind to themselves, and how to be kind to others. And it's just really something that I connect with. Losing a parent at a very young age can be very traumatic, and that's something that I went through. And I would say, you know, in my early elementary years all the way through middle school, having some of those coping skills and having some of that education would have had a big impact on me. So I'm really passionate about anything that can improve that, right? I think kids these days are really exposed to social media. I think it's really intensified. My son is 15, so I've seen some of what he's been through. And I think the more education you can give young people on mental health and proper coping skills is great. So that's really associated with that organization, really passionate about it.
And it ties back, I think, to what we spoke about before, resilience, staying the course. That's all important in your financial life as well, to be able to withstand, I suppose, volatility and uncertainty.
Yeah, that's how I got here. So I think running has a lot of alignment with that. So being able to finish, even if it's a 5K, and having that perseverance and being able to stick with it is a lot of what's led me to where I am today in this industry.
Let's talk about mentors or key people. Did you have mentors throughout your career? Anybody who made an impression on how you see your role in this industry?
Yes. The first firm that I worked at made it very clear to me that there were not a lot of women doing what I was doing, and that it was really important that I continue on and that I can make a really big impact if I can continue on down the trajectory. And I remember, you know, one of the first clients that I spoke with was a female, and she started crying deeper into the conversation because she was so grateful that she could just talk to a female about money. And they offered opportunities to build relationships with other women in the industry outside of the office, which I thought was really impactful. And I had female leaders at that firm, so I thought that that really was a good stepping stone for me. Since coming to Moneta, I have had a lot of female leaders that have helped mentor me and take time again outside of the office to help develop you for one, right? So I'm a mother of three now. I had a baby last June at the peak of my career where it may not have made sense, but knowing you and nine children, I believe it is, right? And how successful you are and you sharing that with me was really impactful. I also had another highly successful partner here when I was wavering with her at lunch about, wow, I really want to be a partner, but I really want to have one more child. She said, make sure you have your child. You only get one opportunity to do that. And that just seeing, not necessarily having open conversations, but just having visibility of other successful females in this industry has had an impact on me.
It is. And I think sharing, it's not perfect. No, nobody's balance is ever going to be perfect. I think showing that the messy reality, but yet the possibilities that are within that messy reality, I think is so important. Why some of these role models you mentioned, and you, of course, in turn, being a role model for other females in the firm, just so important. So thank you for what you do there. You touched on something which I think I'd like to just expand on slightly, which is around taboo and money. Because it's interesting, it is true that women have controlled the purse strings in relationships for decades. Since time immemorial, I think there have been, not necessarily in every relationship, but there have been many where women have controlled the purse strings, the budget, the household budget. But yet it seems that money is more taboo to discuss among women or by women with men than it is among men. And whether that be knowing what salary you can negotiate, speaking about money, is there something, why do you think that taboo still exists?
I think our business has emphasized the investments side of it. I think men tend to look at money or can look at money as more of a competition, whereas women tend to be more focused on planning. But our industry, because of the upfront, I'll call it jargon, on the investment side of it, or even the old model, you know, the old model in terms of a stockbroker was all investments, right? There wasn't a ton of planning involved. But I find with what I do, when I can bring couples together on that, that taboo kind of goes out the window when you start talking about goals and planning and just some basic education on investments. I don't think that taboo still presents, but I think because of the old way the business was ran, it can be perceived as more of the technical investment piece of it. And I think that that's where you kind of run into that taboo, or it's just not maybe of interest. But I think that's also changing. I have a lot of conversations with women about money. Maybe it's because they know what I do, but I find when we get the conversation going, there's a lot of interest. It's just the accessibility of it hasn't been that great.
But information is power as well, I think, when it comes to money and knowing the bands, perhaps the salaries can get to. There is a vested interest in certain areas of maintaining things behind under wraps or not being transparent. And you felt, for the very beginning, we spoke about transparency around fees, the importance of transparency. And I think perhaps it's not everywhere is as transparent as it could be, particularly with respect to salaries, for example. But hopefully that's changing.
Yes.
And the last question is around any creed or motto that you live by. So you've spoken about your life's trajectory and how the people that have influenced you and the way you approach your work. Anything you can leave us with in terms of words of wisdom or ways that you see the world?
Yeah, I wrote a few of these down. So be an owner and control your own destiny. The entrepreneurial spirit that I have has always been really important to me. I think ownership is freedom. And I think it gives me freedom to design my business around the clients that I want to serve and have the flexibility and independence that I can pass a business on to my next generation. I can develop other leaders on my team and really have the freedom and independence that I seek to have full fulfillment in my career. I think when you don't have that, I think that that can lead to some dissatisfaction, especially later on. So that's really important to me. Take great care of people and they will take great care of your clients. That has always been my motto. And I've been asked what my leadership style is. It's really simple. Just take really good care of the people that are working for you. So that's something that I've lived by that I think has helped me become successful. The other one that I wrote down was keep swimming. So when we talk about the chaos of, you know, starting a business or starting your career, family planning, working, doing both, I think women need to give each other a break. I think no matter what path that you take, it's not always easy raising a young family. And I've always had, similar to running, you know, just maintaining that perseverance, I think has always made me successful in this business, because my career has been up and down. Transitioning through firms was not the easiest thing that I've ever done. But sticking to what I know and what my long-term vision is has really helped me. And it's about how quickly you can bounce back. So again, ups and downs in your career, ups and downs in life, focusing on how you bounce back, I think has made me successful versus focusing on whatever it was that I was dealing with at the time.
I love that, getting back to the resilience. And I'm going to sneak in one more question, because the work you do with Girls on the Run just is so inspiring because of that young generation being our future. If you were giving advice to your younger self, or to one of those girls that you work, that you run with, and they're learning resilience and learning coping skills, is there anything you would advise?
You're good enough.
And imposter syndrome.
Yes. Yes. I think, you know, having that confidence, especially coming into the industry that I've came into, there's a little bit of imposter syndrome, I think, early on, especially as you start to find some success, and just reminding yourself that you're good enough and you can have it.
I love that. It reminds me, first of all, I think that's what I like to do in this podcast, to share just how pervasive imposter syndrome is, not just with women, but with men, and everyone is experiencing it. So I think if we know it's not just us, that is very encouraging. And also, one of my previous guests in the last series said, well, everyone's really just figuring it out. And we are. We're in unprecedented times. And I think if we don't have, there is no playbook, and it's not that everybody else knows it all. But I think when we realize that, kind of lowers the bar a little bit for having to know it all ourselves. As long as we figure it out with humanity, I think we're probably going to be okay.
Yeah. And I think today's world is open to a little bit more vulnerability. So talking about some of that and verbalizing it, I think, is less taboo than it used to be. So I've found that to be really comforting.
Well, thank you so much, Maggie. From one runner to another.
Yes.
It's been a wonderful course together that we've taken through your career. I think you truly are the voice of the next generation. The energy, the drive you bring is just a marvel to behold. So thank you for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Yep, thank you.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.